And it comes down to the education system, which is failing us terribly. If we were to allow students to be taught at least two ideas, two alternatives at the same time, and then ask the students for themselves to make up their minds as to which one makes more sense and give good arguments why, you would be generating the scientists of the future, not the people who can do mathematics, you know, in their sleep, or the ones who can memorize whole pages of information and regurgitate it in exams.
I mean, I'm sure I pissed off a lot of people tonight. I've exposed things that are shocking.
That's okay. That's going to happen, David. That's going to happen. And sometimes you're going to step on a few toes.
And I've never done this before. You're the first show I've ever done this on fully.
I don't even have the words at the moment, and that's kind of unusual, people say.
Well, do it live!
I can't really identify the systems exactly. I can tell you that they were at least 40 to 50 years in the future compared to everybody else.
My God.
This technology, just mind-blowing things.
Wow.
Isn't that strange? We were talking about the president and all of a sudden we got cut off.
If you can make your voice heard, you can stand up for these things.
What's good talking with you, though?
You can speak out on these things.
UFO hunters tried to slam.
I've seen some crazy things, man, in the astral plane and also in the waking.
They could
cool.
And
he claims that his audience is just as big as coast to coast. So
I can stand up for these things that I believe.
Oh, really?
I can stand up.
Wow.
I can speak out.
You guys are truly kicking ass.
I can change the world.
Some sort of sex operator.
He's a sex operator.
Sex
is the paranormal, Michael.
Are straightforward, I would say straight shooters.
I don't want to brag, but by myself, killed a guy.
Well, today I'm going to speak to you about spiritradio.com.
Shout out in the day, baby.
Spirit,
you
listen to
that.
We're going
to
a trend.
You would not even know about the secrets.
Everybody
just
joins the best,
third
best show in
the world. The me before you were born, young man. Before you were born.
3-year-old Charles Jr. Charles, you are not
from the broken ruins of Babylon. This is End of Days Radio. The trumpets have sounded, and the end of all has begun. As the beast rises from the ocean, End of Days Radio is here to awaken the fire in your heart. And now, introducing the greatest tag team radio has ever witnessed. I am Daniel, I'm your host and guide for this program, and I'm broadcasting from Green Gotham itself, Seattle, Washington. And introducing my partner in crime and our other host of this one-of-a-kind program, go ahead and introduce yourself, Michael.
And welcome to a brand new life, to a brand new day, from all the way from the wastelands of California, in the desolate land of Hell Centro. My name is Michael, Master of Ceremonies. We look forward to once again serve you those conscious coma-inducing vibrations. You can hear us live on our normal show date. That's usually on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. On the TuneIn Radio app, search End of Days Radio or go to our website, endofdaysradio.com, and that's where you'll find us. Or listen to the podcast version of this show on iTunes and Stitcher. Come on into the chat room right now if you want. That's at endofdaysradio.com. The number for those brave souls out there is 760-332-8065. Let's hear those sweet little voices, 760-332-8065 or 760-332-8724. Also, you can contact us through Skype. That's End of Days Mike with the letter Y and not the letter I. First time listeners, turn on, tune in, and drop out. This is a different kind of show, a place where we don't feel so alone. Let us chase away the light no matter what you at home choose to believe. We admire you for your curiosity. So once again, here we are. Very, very special time. Very special guest. We'll be joined by David Essel. For the past 25 years, David has been a nationally syndicated radio talk show host with Westwood One, Premier Radio, Clear Channel Communications, XM Satellite, and iHeart Radio. David's topics range from relationships to finances, weight loss to attitude, addiction recovery to overcoming divorce, depression, all sorts of great things. I'm glad I have him on here tonight, Daniel.
Yeah, what are we doing here? This is so crazy.
It's always crazy. Always.
It's 1 p.m. here, and we are doing End of Days Radio live.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes, and I believe we will be joined right now by our guest. Hello. David, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, perfect. Hello and welcome to End of Days Radio. It's quite a pleasure and honor to have you here joining us today. David, it's we've never had a guest quite like you before.
I'm taking that as a positive.
believe me, it's as positive as can be. That's a great thing.
Oh, good. Well, I've been excited to talk with you as well and to be a part of your program for sure.
Oh, I know. I was truly excited to have you on here today, and there's so many things we can get into, but before we do...
And so many of our listeners that need your help.
For sure. Lots of help is needed. But before we get into anything, can you give us a little background info on yourself, David?
My Lord, I don't even know where I start. You know, 30 years ago, guys, I started this work in the health and fitness industry, and then transferred over, not too far of a transfer, to sports psychology, working with athletes. And then in 1990, 25, 26 years ago, I went into what we call the general population, which means that through counseling and coaching, we help anyone in any type of a challenge in life, or, you know, someone that wants to accomplish a goal that they've never up to this point have been able to accomplish in relationships, addiction recovery, their physical health, career, finances. There really isn't anything that we don't cover outside of politics. I am totally apolitical. So I don't think I'll ever get involved in that world. But, you know, we've written now nine books. Our last one, which I think one or both of you heard me talk on George Norrie's show, about our newest book, the ninth book. It just hit number one bestseller, and the title is so different for the work that I do. It's called Positive Thinking Will Never Change Your Life, But This Book Will: The Myth of Positive Thinking, The Reality of Success. And then here I am with you guys, you know, like ready to rock the world and lift spirits in any way we can.
Oh, I love that. But
yeah, this is great. Uh-huh. Because one thing that we've been accused of here and there is giving people a little bit too much false hope in some of the things we talk about. So it's good to have somebody that's going to tell us the difference between like realistic goals and goals that aren't realistic.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know what? I'm sure, are you guys familiar with the different teachings like The Secret and The Law of Attraction?
Yes.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Familiar, you know, and kind sure. of the simplicity that these programs offer. And I'm not saying they're bad programs. They're very interesting, very entertaining. About 20% of what they share is very factual, extremely factual. But then there's this part of these trainings where they say, you know, if you think a certain way, you can attract a great lover. You think a different way, you can attract huge amounts of money. You think a different way, you can lose all kinds of weight, you know. And so over the years and years ago, we used to teach the same philosophies that this book now dispels. And years ago, we used to say to people, it's all in your attitude. It's all in your mind. If you just became more positive, you could radically change your life. But it's not that simple. And so we'd created this book as a way to sort of counterbalance the illusion that if you change your thoughts, you're going to change your life. And man, if it was that simple, first of all, the three of us would be somewhere else, probably. Well, I don't know. You know, the three of us love radio, so we'd probably do radio no matter where we were.
But, of course.
Scarlett Johansson would be right here, right now.
What'd you say?
I said Scarlett Johansson would be right here, right now.
Oh my gosh. Do you share?
Yeah. Oh my.
You know, amen. Oh gosh, is she something? You know, and that's what I'm saying. If it was that simple. And in the book, you know, one of the famous lines from the Law of Attraction is that whatever you think about, you can bring about. And you know, that's a cute little saying. And another one would be along the concept that you only want to surround yourself with activities that feel good. So in other words, if you're doing something that doesn't feel good, that's a sign you're on the wrong path. And both of those statements are so illogical. It's not even funny. In the book, we take the second one, you know, if it doesn't feel good, that means you're on the wrong path, and say, well, there'd be no gold medalist in the Olympics You know, if all those women and men did was train on a daily basis and do what they enjoyed, oh my gosh, there'd be no gold medalists. There'd be no doctors. Who the hell's going to go through 12 years of training and internships and spend all that money or take out all those loans and work these outrageous hours in the emergency room? Like, there's a lot of people that don't really enjoy, but they know that's part of the path to be successful. So our book is really truly about realism. Yes, we say that 20% of your success will be due to what you think. You know, I'm a huge positive thinker, and I still get up every day, and the first hour is meditation and prayer and gratitude writing. You know, affirmations are important in the morning, and then I go and I work my butt off. And that's really the method of success. 80% of success. So if 20% is your mindset, how you think, you know, looking at the concept of gossip, negativity, you know, removing that is so crucial, but that's still only 20%. The 80% that people need to be aware of when you want to become more successful, have a better body, make more money, a better relationship, that's the part of the book, which is 90% of the book. That's the part of the equation that people don't want to face. It's and one of the big, most important steps is when you get up in the morning is to, after you do your meditation and prayer and journaling and all the fun stuff, would be to sit and figure out, what am I procrastinating on yesterday that I really don't want to do? And do that first thing in the morning, guys. If that means going to the gym first thing because you put it off and then you don't go, if it means contacting prospects to sell, if you're in some type of an industry where you need to be promoting a product and selling, and if you keep putting it off, whatever you're procrastinating, do that 5 days a week as a major step towards success.
Do you believe in luck, sir?
I believe that there's two forms of luck. One is that we create by doing exactly what I just said. In other words, I was just telling someone today, they asked me how I started in TV, and it was a lucky break. So let me explain one form of luck. I was in the biggest book show in the United States in Anaheim, California in 1986. And this was when I was in the health and fitness industry, and one of the companies I worked with had these 6-foot posters of me, which is really quite funny to think about. And I'm signing these posters, and there's lines of people. And now I had just been traveling 40 weeks a year promoting this video series we did and everything. And there I am for hours and hours, several days in a row, signing these posters, talking to people, having a blast. It was an absolute blast. And there was this guy that stood across from me for about 45 minutes, never came over, never asked for an autograph, never did anything. And it was kind of weirding me out. So I said to Susan Aris, who was my publicist back then, I said, Susan, could you go see and just sort of talk to that guy? She was awesome with people and sort of feel him out. I'm not sure why he's hanging out for 45 minutes and not coming over, not saying anything. So she goes over and talks to him. She comes back. She goes, oh, my God, when you're done, your mind is going to be blown when you talk to this guy. Well, he was a big TV producer in New York City. He was watching me and he was trying to evaluate, would I be good on their television show? So at the end of signing, I walked over to him and said, hey, Susan said something about being on TV. He goes, yeah, I already made the decision. You're going to be on TV next week in New York. We'll pay for your ticket. We'll put you in a hotel, limo, wow, drive it to the TV station and back. And he said, you know what? If you're as good on TV as you are with these people, we're going to sign you on to be our health and fitness expert. Now, that's what I would consider luck. But the interesting thing about that lucky experience is that I was on the road 40 weeks a year working my butt off to create luck. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I don't think there is no such thing as luck in my mind. When preparation meets opportunity, that's when it all happens.
Well, you know, I believe that as well. But you know what, Michael, there's a part of luck, though, that I want to say is supernatural. And that is the person that's not purposefully trying to create, like in my case, I was trying to create this name in the industry.
Correct.
Back in 1986, I was trying to create it and I was working my butt off. But the other part of luck that I think is kind of supernatural is like when something happens and you had no intention. You had no, you know, like you had no intention of being in a relationship. You had no intention of dating. You had no, were just not going to do it. And you decided to take a different subway, a different taxi, a different something. And then all of a sudden you bump into someone and it's like, wow, I wasn't online dating. I wasn't telling my friends that I wanted to meet someone. And I took a different taxi or a different subway. And all of a sudden, I ran into this person that blew my mind and we started dating. That's kind of that supernatural luck.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I could understand that. Yeah. But
I think the first, what you said, you know, opportunity is presented through people that work their butts off. I think that's how we get luckiest the fastest.
Oh, definitely. That's another great point there. David, you said something that, of course, I love very much, radio, and you've been doing it for a very, very long time. What exactly got you interested, first of all, in radio, sir?
Oh, my goodness. This is another one of those stories.
I love the stories.
1990, I had gotten to this place in my career where I had done very, very well. And then all of a sudden, because of a very bad business decision on my part, I was, I'll say naive. I trusted some people. And at the end of about 12 months, I was down to just a few dollars in the bank account. I mean, it was one of the scariest times in my life. And this company that had seen me speak many times as a motivational speaker, out of the blue, called me up one day and said, "Hey, listen, we don't know if you could do this for us. We have no money, but we need someone to cut a radio commercial for us. But all we can afford is $25. And I didn't say this to them, of course, but at that time I said, "Oh my God, $25. At least I can fill my tank up, my gas. Heck yes, I'll do it." So they faxed me over the script. I read through the script a few times. It was very, very simple. And then I had to drive 40 minutes to this tiny radio station in Venice, Florida. And I show up and I go to the front desk and I say, "I'm here to cut the spot." They brought me into the engineer. We said, "Hi." He said, "Do you want to run through it?" He goes, "I'll tape it." But he goes, it normally takes, you know, 10, 15, 20 times. "Have you ever done this before?" I said, "Never." He goes, "Okay." Well, goes, "We'll go ahead and do a run through." And he said, "We'll just tape everything. And if we can't get it right, we will cut and paste it all together." And he goes, "Nope, no issues, no problems. So don't get nervous." I said, "Okay." So I did it one time. He looks at me and he goes, "Okay, we're done." And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "We got it. You did it in one take." And I walked out. As I'm going to my car, this woman, Lorene, I can still remember so many of these names, comes running out to the parking lot. She goes, "Hey, are you the guy that just cut that radio spot?" And I go, "Yeah." She goes, "You did it in one take." I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Are you a host?" I go, "Oh God, no, I don't know anything about radio." "What do you do?" "I'm a motivational speaker." She said, "How would you like your own show?" And I said, "What do you mean my own show?" She goes, "Yeah, Fridays at 11, right before Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh comes on at noon. We've got this spot. Do you want it?" And I go, "Oh my God, sure." And I said, "What's it pay?" She said, "Nothing." I go, "I'll take it." So, you know, I ended up getting this position, and it was like I had 3 days to prepare. And she called me on the phone afterwards and said, "Do you know what you're going to talk about Friday?" I said, "I don't have a thing." She goes, "Well, just talk about whatever you know." So I said, "Okay, it's going to be a health show then. It's going to be on motivation and health and fitness." She said, "Perfect." So I ended up doing that show for about 8 months. And then I went to the general manager, Dave, and said, "Hey, I'm not getting paid for this still. And I'd really like to get paid." And he said, "You know, we've tried to sell your show for 8 months now and no advertisers want it. The only thing I can do is tell you, we'll cut you a demo and then you can start shopping it." So, you know, I got this demo tape, 6 minutes long. This is when we had audio cassettes. You guys are probably too young to remember that.
Oh, no, I remember. Oh, yeah.
So we had this little 6 minute demo and I, you know, mailed it out all over Florida and everyone said no. So I was, you know, again, I'm not making much money. I'm struggling to make ends meet. And all of a sudden I went back into the general manager. I said, "Listen, I'm getting shot down." And he goes, "Well, go to the bigger cities." I said, I think I'm chasing my tail. Any other ideas?" He said, "Well, if you want to go after the big guys," he said, "there's two. One is Mutual Radio, which is Westwood One. Became Westwood One." He said, "Mutual Talk Radio, Larry King is there." He goes, "You can go after them." And then he said, "You can go after Premier Radio." And so I said, "You know what? I'm going to go after Mutual Westwood One." And I did. And I called Peggy Solomon, was the vice president back then. And she was in Washington, D.C. Guys, I called her every week for about 3 months and they never patched me through. Never. And finally, I called one time and this guy, it was a Friday, and this guy picks up the phone and it was always a woman. A guy picks up the phone and he goes, "What's your name?" I go, "David Essel." He goes, "Oh," he goes, "you're on the do not pass on list."
Whoa.
And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, it must mean that you've called Peggy so many times and she's never talked to you that she has no interest." So he goes, but look it, I'm going to tell you something off record. In about 2 months, there's going to be an opening on a Saturday, Sunday. So if you're going to get her, now is the time to get her. And I don't know what to tell you to do, but now's the time. And he hung up. So I immediately thought, well, you know, she's not taking my call. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call all the people I've been in television with. Now, I was in national television for about 3 or 4 years by now. And I got them all to fax her endorsements saying, we think David Essel would be amazing on national radio. And he's an expert in these areas.
Yeah.
On Monday afternoon, I get a call from Peggy Solomon, and I didn't know what the number was. And I pick it up and I said, hello. And she goes, is this David Essel? I said, yes. And all I heard was her say, stop. And I said, what? And she said, stop. And I said, stop what? She goes, this is Peggy Solomon, Westwood One. I go, oh, my God. I go, Peggy, what do you want me to stop? And she goes, stop faxing me this stuff.
Mm.
Listen, I got everything I need. I'm flying you up for an interview, but only under one condition. You stop calling me and stop faxing us.
Oh, that's great.
And wouldn't you know, 3 months later, guys, I go up to the interview, and that started a 10-year career with Westwood One.
Amazing. Were you listening to any radio shows before that?
Yeah, you know who was on constantly was Larry King. And do you remember Larry the comedian King. David Brenner?
Unfortunately, I do. Yeah, I remember.
Well, Larry King, you know, was the guy I listened to. He's the only talk show host. Oh, no, let me take that back. Larry King and Bruce Williams. Do you remember Bruce Williams?
Wow, you're hitting me with the Bruce Williams. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you an interesting story about Bruce. Well, Bruce Williams and Larry King were the only ones I listened to.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they were interviewing me at Westwood One, of course, you know, they wanted to know all my experience in talk radio. And I said, oh, my God, I've been a host for 8 months at a state. We had three listeners, guys. I'm not kidding you. It was Edith, Mary Beth, and God, what was her name? I mean, that's how tiny our city was, like this little Venice, Florida, right?
Correct.
And so, you know, I couldn't really sell that I've been in talk radio that long. And they asked me who I enjoyed. And I said, Larry King. And so that led to
David,
them.
David, what year was this?
1990.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is about early 1990, I have to imagine. Since Larry King was doing the radio there.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just saying, since Larry King was kind of very popular at that time with radio.
He was huge, you know. And
right.
If you remember, Larry King at that time went to daytime. He had switched from his overnight and he went to daytime. I think he was 3 to 6. Bruce Williams was like 7 to 10 and Larry might have been 3 to 7 or 4 to 7. I forget there was a switch, but when I got on board and started doing it, my show was every Saturday and Sunday night from 10 at night to 1 in the morning. And when Larry went off the air, that's when they put David Brenner in his place. And it wasn't a big hit, but yeah, that was my intro into radio. And I mean, I've loved it over the years.
By the way, I don't think many people know about his death.
Who's that?
Bruce Williams.
I didn't know he died.
He tragically died.
Tell me how long ago.
Well, according to this, it was back in 82.
That's not true.
That's what I'm seeing here. I'm like, what? This can't,
you know,
be
why?
The
that's
same guy.
When I signed on with Westwood One in 1990, I went up to Bruce's studio and he mentored me. 1991, 92. I think the last time I saw him was in 93. And I would go up every once in a while because he was about 3.5-4 hours from where I lived. And I would just sit down and bullshit with him. And, you know, he would give me tips on, you know, how he thought a talk radio show should be and how, what he thought a host should be known for. And I'll tell you, one of the interesting things that I never, you know, will never forget Bruce Williams say to me is that he said, you know, right now your name is everything. David Essel is it. Don't let a network come in and, you know, and change the show to Positive Living Today or Healthy Living Today. And then underneath it with David Essel, he said, keep your name at the forefront. That's the best advice I could give you. And it was interesting because when I went up to negotiate with Westwood One, one of the things they originally thought about doing was changing it to a generic name. And Bruce was in my corner. But no, he was still alive.
Right. Yeah. I meant to say he was in a coma. And he was clinically dead for a short time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in a coma for 20 days. I didn't mean to. Well, I let you continue to talk there. I should have cut you off to correct myself. But No, he was in a coma for 20 days and he was able to broadcast later, 4 weeks later, matter of fact. That's insane. Who does that?
I know. Well, you know what? I don't even know. Is he still alive today?
I believe he is, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still alive.
He's one of those guys that I'd say if there's a few people in the world that may never die, Bruce Williams may be one of them.
And Keith Richards.
You know, you make a good point about these companies, the radio broadcasting companies. I heard that on some K-Rock stations, they were actually taking away people's names and giving them generic sort of names like Nels or some kind of, you know, dumb nickname, not even letting them use their names at all.
Yeah. You know, it's scary because, I mean, and obviously they're doing it for control. They're doing it to be able to let people go without losing the quote unquote following. There's, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you guys know, I mean, radio has really changed. When we first started, it was all contractual.
Right.
I mean, you know, anyone who was on, you know, radio, I mean, you were under contract, which meant you got actually paid. Interesting concept. Today, most people are either bartering. If they're not a big name, you know, they're bartering, they're paying for airtime. They're doing everything in the world on their own. Really changed.
Pay to play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really true.
It is. And it's scary because, the radio business has changed dramatically. Let me ask you another question, sir. You're very familiar with Dr. Drew, right?
Oh, very much so.
Well, Loveline is the show I always give credit to that first got me interested in wanting to do a talk show because it was a caller-driven, motivated show. And Loveline is amazing. Well, it was back in the 90s, and now it's kind of deteriorated. And something very interesting I read was Dr. Drew wasn't even being paid in the later years of that. And
are you serious?
I'm dead serious. He wrote about it and talked about it. And I think that's kind of sad. Is that the state of nationally syndicated radio now?
Well, you know what I wonder? I'm trying to figure out with his name recognition, I wonder if maybe the network wasn't paying him, but his show was being sponsored by a rehab center or, you know, or some major corporation that he was making money that way. Because one of the things that I saw towards the end of my contract with Westwood One is that they were looking to bring in a sponsor that would pay me directly so that Westwood One wouldn't have to.
Correct.
So I'm wondering if maybe that's how Dr. Drew has such a huge name. I can't imagine that he would have to do radio for free. Unless the other option could be is that if he had something he was selling, maybe he traded a salary for his own commercial airtime.
Or it just brings him a few more patients.
Yeah. Yeah. Like let's say that, you know, he collected patients for his rehab. And is he still doing that rehab type show?
No.
I'm not even sure.
Distancing himself from it. But there are so many people from the show that died. Yeah. So I think that the network and people in general started to have a negative opinion about it.
Yeah, you know, we've been doing addiction recovery for 20 something years now, and we wait a number of years before one of my clients will even ask them to come on the air. We want to make sure, like, as a matter of fact, a couple Saturdays ago, I had one of my clients that we had helped get out of a very nasty alcohol addiction, and she came on the air, but she's been clean over 3 or 4 years now, and we felt very secure with bringing her on the air. One of the shows that I remember seeing and listening to Dr. Drew do is that he was doing people that were still in active addiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, which is very difficult, man.
Oh, yeah, it is. I didn't mean to get very personal with you, but I do have an uncle who's, I would have to say he's an alcoholic. And it's terrible to see someone like that you care about that can't seem to help themselves.
It's brutal. Well, I don't know if you guys know that I'm in recovery for alcohol and cocaine addiction.
Yeah, I remember reading something like that, and I know you had gone through your own troubles, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, very brutal. You know, and here I am, a guy that should know, quote unquote, you know, how to get out of an addiction when I'm helping other people do it. But even, I mean, when I was helping other people get clean and I was struggling, it was mind blowing. You know, and there were nights I'd go home, and every night at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, I'd start drinking for God years. And there were times I was very lucid going, what the hell am I doing? And then eventually I had to go into a treatment center. I had to commit a year of my life to recovery, and it has worked. And this side of the fence, gosh, for your listeners, I want to tell you something. If anyone is listening and they're struggling, or they have a loved one that's struggling and they don't know what the other side of the fence is, the other side of the fence is freaking heaven on earth. I will be honest with you. But you know, all addictions are the same. It doesn't matter if it's pain pill, food, nicotine, sex, alcohol. It doesn't matter what it is. One of the biggest problems with addiction is that we're thinking about it even when we're not using.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
It's all time consuming. So it's worth it. Whatever you have to do, it's worth it to get clean, because this side of the fence is so awesome.
You also talk about relationships quite a bit.
Oh, God, I love that. That topic. Yes.
Can somebody find their soulmate with positive thinking? Does that work at all?
I love it. Well, you know, let's break that down into two questions. Number one, is there a such thing as soulmates? We honestly believe, you know, the definition that a lot of people use for soulmates, that we think is a myth, is that there's one person in this world who you will connect with and it will be effortless, and you'll finish each other's sentences and you won't have the chaos and drama that you've had in all your other relationships. And, you know, God forbid that person happens to be in Hong Kong and you're in New York. But you know, that's really the most accepted definition of a soulmate, is that there's one person on this earth, and when you find them, you know, it's going to be like a long lost lover that you can't believe you haven't been with, and everything just meshes. So we're going to first say that's probably one of the greatest illusions that this country has ever taken and blown up. I believe, and this is alternative thinking for sure, but I believe anyone that we have dated for any length of time whatsoever is a soulmate. They were brought into our life, and all soulmates have one role. The only role a soulmate has is to help us improve. So then someone will say, like, we have clients that have been beaten. We have clients with huge domestic abuse, and they'll come in and they'll go, how can you say that my former husband or my former wife was my soulmate when they beat me or they abused me emotionally or whatever it might be? And we say, listen, in the case that you stayed, they continued to repeat the behavior so that you could grow and leave, so that you could shatter your codependency, so that you could actually get two really strong legs and say, I deserve much better than this, on the second week or third week or sixth week or whenever it was that it exploded, and not wait. So they're a soulmate in regards to saying to you, you deserve much better than me. But if you stay, then you're buying into their philosophy that you are no better than them. And this is something that we have shared all over the world, this definition of soulmates. Now, I honestly do believe that at the end of the day, if you end up dating or marrying 20 people or dating 30 people or dating 6 people.
Oh, my goodness.
If you want to have the final relationship that you've learned everything from these previous relationships, and you want that final one to be stellar, then we could say that is the ultimate soulmate relationship. But I don't really buy into this thing that there's only one soulmate. But I do believe that if you're serious about doing the work and looking inside and saying, what mistakes have I made in the past and how can I improve myself, and not just sit in the blame game of that, you know, all men are dogs or all women only want one thing to be taken care of. If we get out of that victim mentality, we can improve looking at the past relationships, the mistakes we've made, improve. And then maybe if we so desire that one final lasting relationship, we can create another level of soulmate, which is one that we leave this earth with.
Yeah.
Do you believe in past lives?
Oh, my God. That is an awesome question. You know, I do, and I'll tell you why I do. I don't see any other explanation for a 3-year-old having the ability to play the piano like someone who's 23 or 50, and yet it happens. I watched on Facebook the other day this, I think the kid was like 3 years of age and he was watching a Bruce Lee movie. This is just so freaking far-fetched. He's watching a Bruce Lee movie and he is mimicking every move, martial art move that Bruce Lee was doing. And this kid was 3 years of age. I don't know, guys, how you explain that type of like mastery at such a young age, whether they're 2 years of age or even 10, without it being related to past life. What do you guys believe about past life?
I think it's possible. I mean, there's been accounts of children being very young in age, being able to do things like what you just said at a very early age without any prior teaching or knowledge. And I remember reading something that children from 5 to about 7, they remember certain past lives.
Yeah.
But they can't really explain what it is because they're still children, of course, so they don't understand these dreams or visions that they get in their minds. They're still too young to comprehend.
I've always just kind of had this feeling like I've been here before. I remember when I was a kid, I just felt like I was an adult, even though I wasn't. I just always kind of had that feeling.
Very nice. I think it was back in the early 80s, I read this article about the Dalai Lama. And they said that when he was like 3 years of age, his mother couldn't find him. And they were racing all through this very poor neighborhood or village they lived in India. And they finally found him. And he was in someone's garage and he was putting the parts of an engine, an automobile engine, back together. Like they were all laid on the hay or grass or something. And he was lining them up perfectly. In other words, that if someone were to connect them all together, the engine would have run, type of thing. And I remember reading that going, you know, like at what age? I mean, how could that not be reincarnation? And, you know, the other thing, one of my favorite authors in the 80s, Dr. Brian Weiss, came out with one of his first book that became a bestseller, and many physicians, psychiatrists at that time called him an absolute quack, and now they're calling him brilliant. Many lives, many masters. Dr. Brian Weiss, he opened the doorway to past life work in this current life. Amazing.
Nice. I love reading about past life regression. Need to look into that. But going back to relationships, sir, here on the program, we've talked quite a bit about how some people don't want children. There's certain adults out there that really don't want children, and that topic seems to bother a lot of people. Do you have any understanding why some people out there get upset when they find out some adults out there don't want kids?
You know, it's an interesting question. My brother, I have never had children myself. I've been a stepdad a couple times. I have raised several children out of just in a regular relationship. And then I was married with children. And I always feel that I've felt, even to this day, that I have a great propensity to be a phenomenal dad. If that ever still could happen, it still could happen.
I'm sure it can.
I'm sorry?
I'm sure it can.
Yeah, it still can, you know? But I've also been very at peace with, if I don't have children, then that's the path that I'm supposed to follow. I don't fight it. I don't argue it. I struggle with, and I feel bad, especially for women who are pressured by their families
or their friends,
children, right?
Yes, or their friends or on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly.
Heavily influenced by that.
Maybe they're not supposed to be. And, you know, I counsel over the years, I've counseled many women that have been very honest with me in our sessions, saying that they wish they never had children.
Oh, I know. I hear it all the time.
Right? That they don't feel that they have that maternalistic drive. They just, it doesn't come logically. It doesn't come easily. That they're always stressed because they just don't have that internal makeup, that maternal drive to know what to do next. And other women, you know, they crave it. They love it. They desire it. That's all they've wanted to be. But, you know, I think it's a difficult conversation. The one thing I would say to people who are judgmental and saying that, you know, you should have a child and it's, you know, your religious responsibility, mm-hmm, or whatever it is that's a very sad state. And a lot of people have children, not because they want to, but because they feel pressured to. And you never want to bring a child into this world because someone else wants it, but you don't.
Oh, it seems like that's a lot going on out there, sir.
Yes.
Lots of people forced into things they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because society tells them so.
I think the Earth has pretty much been populated fully. I don't think that we need to really finish covering the Earth. It's already happened. I don't think that anybody should feel obligated to have kids. It's probably better not to, with all this overpopulation stuff going on and these accusations that there's a hidden elite that wants to reduce the population.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree with you guys both. I think that it needs to be now. We, you know, there's a condition that we work with. It's called codependency, and codependency is the largest addiction in the world. And this is a great time to bring it up right here on the show. So
yeah, this is interesting.
Yeah. You know, codependency is it really falls into a couple different categories, but one is it's a craving to be accepted, a craving to be liked, a craving to be understood, a craving to be appreciated. And then the opposite of that is a fear of judgment, a fear of rejection, a fear of abandonment, a fear of being disliked. So when you put all that together, if we have, we'll just say stereotypically, a woman is growing up in a family and she moves out and she's, you know, 18 or 21 or whatever it might be. And her family is saying, you know, you really should have a child. It's God's wish, or it's whatever, religious or not religious reasons. The codependent woman, the one that fears rejection, fears judgment, fears abandonment, craves acceptance, craves to be liked, that person is kind of like this bamboo pole in the wind, and they're going to sway whatever direction popular opinion pressures them. And so we see this addiction of codependency is massive. I mean, it could be called peer pressure is another example of codependency, where people have a hard time to stand up and do what's right for them. And so they buckle to the system around them and make decisions that they regret later on.
By the way, David, I hate to even go back to this or go back to dating and stuff, but I did want to ask your opinion on these certain popular apps out there that are dating apps like Tinder and Grindr, all sorts of different apps, Plenty of Fish, all for hooking up with someone.
Match.com.
There's all sorts of
Ashley Madison.
There's all sorts of
Ashley Madison. Yeah. Oh my lord.
There's all sorts of things that are going on. What's your take on that, sir?
A large majority of people on those apps are not really looking. I mean, if they're going to be honest, they're not really looking for long-term relationships. There's a lot of people that are on it for attention. They may have lower self-esteem, and so they need to have attention on a daily basis. So and I'm going to be stereotypical here. Let's say that a woman, you know, really needs attention to make herself feel that she's worthy. So she might be on multiple apps, as many of my clients are, in order to, you know, they'll come in one day and they'll say, oh my gosh, I was so burdened last week. I was getting 150 emails a day. And then I would ask them, well, you know, how does that make you feel? And when you got to the core, to the truth, they loved it, or they wouldn't be there.
Yeah, they like that attention.
They want the attention. They desire it. They need it. On the flip side of that is that we have people, men and women, but let's go back to the stereotypical male response, where that a lot of guys would be on there simply for sexual encounters.
Correct.
You know, mm-hmm. Now, this is what I believe, is that if people really know themselves and they're really honest with themselves, then if you go on there just to play to get attention, then state that. State it. You know, it's like when I help people actually write their profiles for these things, and I'll look at their profile and it says, I'll go, you put on here that you're not into chaos and drama, and that if someone is into chaos and drama, don't bother contacting you. And I'll look at them dead in the eye and I'll go, look, this is all filled with respect and love, and I want you to be the best person. But haven't we been working on the fact that you create chaos and drama and all the relationships?
Oh my. Yeah.
You know? So let's be brutally honest with what you truly want. Like, guys, don't write on this thing that you're looking to be the greatest husband and father if that's not your intention. And women, if you want attention, you don't have to put I'm on here because I'm an attention seeker. But say on there, I'm only looking for casual relationships or friendships, or I'm not looking for a serious relationship. I don't really think over time that most people on the sites are really looking for deep, deep, deep love. Some are, absolutely. But I'm going to risk here and say I don't think it's the majority.
Isn't it? Would you agree with me, David, that meeting somebody in real life, like at a grocery store face to face, when you can actually look eye to eye, is much more romantic than dating apps or the internet?
Well, you know what we say to that is that as long as it's a 3 hour, we even have rules for dating rules that I give my clients. If you're going to be on one of those services, as long as it's a 3 hour drive or less, that as soon as you know that there's an attraction, you have 7 days to meet them. Because the illusion of this world that we're looking at, online dating or app dating, the illusion is that people can project all kinds of wonderful things about themselves.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Until you see them in front of a waitress belittling the waitress, or until you see them driving in traffic and screaming at people, you don't know what you got your hands into.
Oh, that's so true. Lots of times you're around, these people you're around, they turn into horrible people once you find out who they really are underneath the skin.
It's really true. You know, that's funny that you said the angles and the lighting. You know, I mean, on some of them, you know, it's current snapshots. And so they can't really lie, you know, if they're showing their full figure or whatever it might be. But on some of the more stationary ones, like the Matches and eHarmony and all those, they can, you know, use pictures from as long ago as they want. And you don't really know until you meet them. And that's why we have that 7 day rule, you know, like meet within 7 days, see if the chemistry's mm-hmm. there, you know, meet them at a Starbucks or someplace where that you're not overcommitted to a whole freaking evening. There's a huge, massive mistake people make. You know, it's called hit and run dating. You go meet them quick, 20 minutes coffee, see if there's chemistry, see what's there, meet them again a week later, you know, do it several times, really short, get an idea of what they're like in public. And see if they really are the match that their profile says they are.
Yeah, use a recent mm-hmm. pick. I mean, everybody looked good when they're in their early 20s.
That's hilarious.
That's cheating.
Exactly.
Yeah, and before we move on from all of this, I also always bring up these teachers, David, that sleep with their students. I don't understand what's going on. It seems like a huge trend here in America. It doesn't seem to be happening anywhere else in the world. It seems like here in the United States, it's a hotbed for such a thing, no pun intended.
Yeah. The thing that's shocking me over the last couple of years in the world of counseling is how many female teachers are seducing male students, or how many female teachers are reacting to a male student's advance.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, and I could be incorrect. I'd have to Google it to be sure. But what I'm seeing in the media is that there are more in the last year or two female female teachers with sexual issues going after their students than there have been male. Now, I could be wrong, but that's the perception I've been seeing in the media.
Truly, it's awful.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on here.
The thing that we'll just stick with the female teacher. The thing that the female teacher going after a young student doesn't understand is lifelong damage. And it's the same thing with a male teacher going after a young girl. The lifelong damage is absolutely horrendous. And we see it in our office. We see women in their 30s and 40s and 50s that were sexually abused by an adult male when they were young. Could be a family member, could not be, could be a teacher. And how that totally destroys their sense of self and confidence. And we do know that when a woman has very early sexual encounters that are not wanted, that are not consensual, that it is often that woman that will turn to drugs, alcohol, and other activities in order to cover up the guilt and shame.
Truly, truly. And a question from the chat, David.
Yes.
They want me to ask you about the effects of new wave feminism hating dudes, in this person's words.
Yeah, hating dudes. I have to be honest with you. I don't see now in the 70s, I was in college. And when the feminist movement first started back then, I honestly saw that as being harsher than it is now. When the feminist movement first came out, there seemed to be this massive, intense backlash against men when I was in college in the 70s. And I don't see it as pervasive as now. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And possibly whoever sent that in, it could have happened to them, which makes it very, very profoundly different than than because I've never experienced that. I don't see it as a movement. I could be incorrect, but I don't see it as a movement right now.
Now, David, since this is sort of a, well, kind of not really a paranormal show, sometimes it can be. What's your opinion on ghosts?
Did you see what Bobby Brown said about having sex with a ghost?
I sure did, and I was going to bring that up eventually, but
yeah, you know, and guys, just as you know, I have only about 2 minutes, and then I have to take a client.
No worries, no worries.
But yeah, you know, okay, well, let me share this personal experience.
Okay,
it was probably around late 80s, and now this wasn't a ghost as much as it was an angel, more of an angel figure, but. I remember waking up one night. I was living in Siesta Key, Florida, and I remember waking up one night and there was a figure of a woman, somewhat angelic, somewhat ghostly only because she was floating on my ceiling in a corner of the room. Now, I wasn't hallucinating. I wasn't on drugs. I wasn't drunk that night. I wasn't doing anything. I was absolutely startled, shocked. I was fearful. I was afraid. Her demeanor was not demonic. It wasn't like the ghost type of demonism that we hear about. But it was incredibly startling. That happened two or three times in that condominium I lived in. And then I never saw her again. I have seen enough of the shows on TV where they have all those type of, gauges and energy gauges and all that. Guys.
Yeah.
I would have to say there's some realism to that. What do you think?
Well, depending on the program, most of these shows that we see on TV have been fabricated in the truth and the presentation. So we can't always take it at face value that this is necessarily reality of what's going on in most of these ghost investigations, because most of the time in these ghost investigations, nothing ever happens. And it's very rare that something ever gets captured on video. But yeah, I do love those TV shows. They're always entertaining, even though they're running around in the dark, being scared of nothing most of the time.
Yeah. But, you know, my experience was interesting, though, because it wasn't a scary figure, but it was still scary.
Yeah. And I think these things can actually appear, sometimes manifest themselves some sort of, I guess you could label it as a ghost or an energy or a spirit.
Yeah.
It's totally possible. I had my own experiences as well, and I've always been skeptical, but at the same time, I know I wasn't making this up or, nor was I on drugs. So I know this is legit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's fascinating stuff. I think that there are energies out there. And you know, some people say both good and evil. I hope that if I have any more experiences, they'll be the gentler ones.
All right. I agree.
Awesome that we were able to talk about some paranormal stuff, but we do want to respect your time and give you an opportunity to go ahead and plug anything that you would like to plug, any recent or upcoming appearances, website, talk about your book a little bit. Feel free. The floor is yours.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Well, we have, you know, our ninth book just became a number one bestseller, and it's Positive Thinking Will Never Change Your Life, but this book will. The Myth of Positive Thinking, The Reality of Success. We have six New York Times bestselling authors that I asked to write in the book who all fully endorse the philosophy. And your listeners can get chapter one absolutely free at our website, talkdavid.com. There's a bunch of other things they can get free there on how to become financially free. There's all kinds of things at talkdavid.com. We love to give away information to keep people inspired and moving forward in a good direction. And this has been thoroughly enjoying for me, guys. I just love the opportunity to be on your show. Your questions were fabulous. And if you ever have any interest in doing anything in the future, let me know. The answer will be
100%. Oh, we got to.
Absolutely. I think this certainly warrants a part two, especially the paranormal topics. I'd like to get into that a little bit more.
Yeah, and I've got a great story about my grandfather coming back to visit me years after he was dead. So, yes.
We got to do a part two if lots of people want you to stay.
Yeah, good. I love it.
So you can go check David out on his website out there. I believe your website's davidessel.com, right?
Yeah, either davidessel.com or talkdavid.com. They both go to the same place.
Ah, okay, perfect. Well, once again, thank you for being on the program. I know it's a bit short, but we have to respect your time here. And listeners, don't worry. He'll be back. He'll be back.
Amen. I'll be back. You guys have a great rest of your day. And thank you again so very much.
Godspeed, David.
Thanks, David.
Okay. Bye now. Bye.
And that was the great David Essel. Wow. That was amazing.
Yeah. Him and this coffee, I'm drinking it. I feel like I have a little extra kick in my step.
Yeah, that was a great time. Great little show here for everyone out there. And originally, I wasn't even sure if I was going to be here, Daniel. I am recovering from a bit of a sore throat.
Wow. First, I get a staph infection. Now it sounds like you're coming down with some sort of throat bacteria.
Well, it was worse 2 days ago. I think I'm getting slightly better.
Yeah, that's too bad. You should probably eat some healthy food and sleep some more.
That's what I've been doing for the past 3 days.
And drink some brandy. Though. They say it's the cure for the common cold.
I've been drinking some holy basil tea. Great stuff. Makes me feel nice.
When I have a sore throat, I take a little swig of some brandy, and it just completely numbs all of that pain and itchy feeling in your throat. I love it.
I don't think I have any brandy, though, anywhere.
You can go and get some cheap brandy from the grocery store for $10 to $12.
Yeah, that's true. I could do that. I could always go that route. No problem. By the way, who's on our next show, by the way? Oh, it's Donald. Oh, yes. I can't wait for that. I had a chance to talk to Donald back at Contact in the Desert very briefly.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about him?
Oh, you want me to talk about him?
Oh, yeah. Like, since he's going to be on Saturday, why not do a little preview?
Okay, sure. But let me first explain how I met him, because I think it's kind of funny. I didn't talk about this on the show, but during George Norrie's birthday party, he had the little party going on out there at Contact in the Desert. Great time. There was food being served, and everyone was very excited by the food, and everyone went up there and they formed a long, long line, and me and Laura waited for a long, long time until that line died out. And then the smarter people went up there once everyone was gone. And by doing so, we got the warm food, the warm, delicious shrimp that came last. We waited for the best stuff to be brought out, Daniel, it seemed like. And in the line, I was making a line there, and Donald was in front of me. And it was pretty interesting because we were both kind of looking at the food, and then there's like this pasta there, and they took most of it. And I told Donald, I told him, damn, they took all the good food. And I said, God damn them. And he started laughing. And I didn't know who he was at first. Until a little bit later, I realized who he was. And Donald, he's a part of the Roswell incident. Well, not a part of it, but he's an investigator of the great Roswell incident of 1947. And he's been covering it for many, many years. I'm truly excited to have him on.
Yeah, that should be good. I think Roswell is one of those things that you hear talked about a lot, maybe not so much now as back in the 90s.
Yeah,
you can go into it like forever and ever, but not really come to any conclusion. There's just so much evidence out there that something happened, and then so many forces trying to bury that information at the same time.
He's the former co-director of the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies, where he served as director of special investigations for 10 years. So I think it's pretty cool. He was on board with the J. Allen Hynek Center, rather. And that's someone we haven't really talked too much about J. Allen Hynek. I think I've mentioned him maybe a few times on the show, but Donald's been everywhere. He's been interviewed frequently on TV, radio. I think he might have even been on Oprah, if I'm mistaken.
Pretty
insane.
These are like the original OG UFO investigators, guys like Stanton Friedman, J. Allen Hynek.
By the way, it's funny that you said that, because Donald was sitting next to, I believe, Stanton Friedman.
Yeah, they all know each other.
They all know each other.
Sure, exchanged information mm-hmm. in the past, back before the days of the internet, when you had to take pen to paper or pencil to paper and write everything down and type it up.
Speaking of
old generation of UFO guys.
Speaking of Stanton, me and Laura saw him a million times along with Giorgio Tsoukalos, but every time we ran into Stanton, he wouldn't remember who the hell we were. It was kind of funny. Not in a mean way, but at one time he thought we were his drivers at one point. So we could have abducted him if we wanted to.
Oh, poor guy.
I know, poor guy. He didn't even know. Luckily, I'm not a troublesome individual who could have taken him away and waterboarded him or something negative like that.
Yeah, it's funny because they did threaten a lot of people that were involved in Roswell. They threatened them and their families.
Yeah, they sure did. They sure did. Well, I believe it's time to get going here. A little short episode for everyone to enjoy, but there's plenty of things we've got to get taken care of today, so we can't stay on too long. I apologize for that.
Yeah, we will be back here live for a full show this Saturday night, so don't fret.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll be back. We'll be back on Saturday before you know it, all together like a happy, dysfunctional family.
Yep, and hear us live here every Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And also get us on iTunes, get us on Stitcher, get us on YouTube, subscribe to us on YouTube. And I'm going to do a little short version here. Follow us on Twitter at DigiShoes. That's me, Daniel, at Michael. I'm sorry, at Michael Deacon. That's Michael. And then I'm just going to cut it right there. Well, I am going to say, if you want to donate, we appreciate your donations, but we would never ask you for any money. Just donate what the show's worth for you, or don't donate at all. Just go to endofdaysradio.com. and click the donate tab. Thank you everybody for listening. And if you want a full version of my plugs at the end of the show, listen Saturday night.
And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night everybody.
Right, didn't record his heart out. I'm not that way, I'm a Christian. Not out of college. Not out of graduate school.
You mentioned the Illuminati, and we're not going to be behind them, but the Illuminati certainly is part of the whole thing. But the top members of the Illuminati are open Bush.
I could tell that all the mainstream media outlets were giving me, like, bullshit. Like, you can just see it. It's clear.
How appropriate. I wish I could be in that ring with Hogan right now.
It's crazy.
I had no idea this shit existed before 1776.
Oh, a Grammy. I'm not a Grammy. I'm a TV real.
A lot of good content. A lot of cool topic. You know, I feel, you know, fortunate to have an opportunity to speak to you guys tonight.
You guys are really good.
Yeah, Mr. Rusev, that son of a bitch. I do not like that man.
It's the simplest shit. You go in there, you see the bartender, you say, what the fuck do you have in your pocket? What the fuck are you going to be smoking tonight about midnight? That's what I want.
Just for what it's worth, I want to put in my 2 cents to tell you both that you have one of the most incredibly well-rounded shows.
22 years old, still a virgin.
Guess what, motherfuckers?
Successfully erased.